All right, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of SCI TV. Today, we are joined by Dan Capello. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure. So, Dan is the founder of Leadership Confidential, and he focuses on decision architecture for driven leaders. And we thought it would be so appropriate to bring him on our podcast and just share, have him share some of his thoughts about the challenges that people experience when it comes to decision making. So thank you so much, Dan. Would love for a quick introduction.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. So I got into this. I am an executive chef by trade and very high level as far as cooking for 30 years. And a lot of the problems we run into is internal friction. And I actually had an identity collapse, and it wasn't at my lowest point. It was right after I was 300 pounds, and then I lost 70 pounds and ran my first Spartan race at 54. I was on top of the world. I solved all my problems, but then I had a memory of a trauma that happened at six and everything fell apart. But also I could see what had happened and what had driven my life for so long, which was the anger, the coping mechanisms, the trigger reactions that I presented under stress. And through all that, I started researching to figure out why, and I discovered an architecture that was underneath an identity that decided how we're going to react. So really, Leadership Confidential is about decision making under pressure, whether it is as a chef on the line. The culinary world's a perfect example to test this in because it is very high stress. Lots of tickets all at once, a lot of food, very specific timelines. There's no practice. You practice up to the point, but when it's game time, you actually have to get it out. There's nobody in a restaurant's gonna wait. It's like, oh, they're just training. It's like, no, they want it right now. So it's a perfect incubator for this.
So, what did you find during your research? So, you said that we all have, a way that we react. So, how does that, what did that research lead you to, within your career?
Well, identities for the past 200, 250 years has been labeled as or defined as your how you behave, your behaviors. That determines what your identity is. But I saw there was something underneath that. I looked past going into, because identity works about going and talking to a therapist and doing this, all this thing. And I'm like, I didn't want to do that. I'm stubborn. And I was like, how do you do this without any of that? Because there's a system underneath, a biological system. And what I found was that there's three layers to identity. The one that we always see is the third layer, the outer layer. That's your behaviors. But it starts with the inner layer is cognitive bandwidth. It's like, how much bandwidth do you have? You have a finite percentage. And once that gets into a defined amount, it starts to compress and you run out of, because you have to have a certain amount of bandwidth to make a good decision. Once you reach a certain point and it collapses or you overload it, there's a second layer, which is your behavior pattern. These are patterns that you develop usually early in life when you're probably before 25. And these are systems that you use to survive a certain situation. It's loss, trauma, failure, all these other things. You create something so that you can survive that event. Well, later in life, most of the people, driven people that I work with have these systems. Well, everybody has them, but they're very good at making you successful at what you do. But once you get to a certain level, when those trigger, they're not good for your promotions or in sports. I mean, there's people that hit the ball 10,000 times or kick that field goal 10,000 times, and all of a sudden they can't kick a field goal or they can't hit the ball. Why? It's a chef. It's you get to a certain point. It's like, why can't they perform under pressure? Well, it's because of the bandwidth, and then it fires this system. And so the behavior is the shortest way for the bandwidth to relax.
And you said that a lot of those systems form before, you know, one turns 25. But for those of us who are older, what can we do to, you know, expand the cognitive bandwidth and also work on that behavior that potentially is prohibiting us from reaching that next level?
Well, what I found is you can't do anything really with the programs. The identity response patterns are there. What you can do is work with the bandwidth, and that's what I work with people, because the pie is only so big. You can't make more pie. And whatever's taken up is ambiguity, unmade decisions. There's physical things. There's 8 different categories that make this up. And when some of them are spiking, it causes that reaction. So it's a matter of learning how to control the bandwidth so that these patterns don't form. And then when you do it enough through a program, a system that I made, you can define a program, an identity response pattern that is going to fire because it becomes useful, because your brain uses something like that because it's successful.
So what type of issues do your clients typically come to you with? Because I feel like it takes a lot of maturity to realize that, hey, I'm having issues here, or like, what can I do? And it's a journey to be able to come from that point A of realizing that there is something wrong in your decision making, and then, you know, seeking help for someone like you. So what does that path typically look like for your clients?
So the last 3 people I've worked with, all of them had, 2 of them had interview problems, and they're in the 4th, you know, like a general manager, or one of them was a VP of manufacturing. They were in their 4th interview of getting a job after they lost their other job. And they were in the 4th one, and they've been in the final round every single time, but they didn't get picked. So their bandwidth has already collapsed because their ambiguity, they don't have a job, they're stressing. So when they're sitting in these interviews, when you go to these interviews on these high-end jobs, they're trying to see how you're going to respond under pressure. And when you are more practiced, because you can practice as much as you want, but when your confidence doesn't show, excuse me, when you're stressed, and you know, you take one pause too many, they feel all that. And people, you know, it's funny that people say you can smell fear on someone. Well, no, they've just learned how to recognize when someone's bandwidth is collapsing. So, yeah.
So when people, for example, don't make it in the final round of an interview, inevitably, I feel like a lot of us jump to conclusions that, oh, I'm not good enough, or especially if it happens many, many times, and if it's in the final round. Do you think that the reason why, if they make it that far, the skills are probably there, right? Like in the background and the resume, like you made it that far. What do you think is the number one pitfall for people when they make it to the final round of whatever it is, right? It doesn't have to be an interview, but that final stage, like the selection for a competition or whatever, is that the pressure? Is it just the inability to give it your all at the end? Like, what could it be?
Well, from what I've discovered is it's the pressure. And as that pressure builds, these patterns fire, and then that's where you're triggered and you can't do what you practice to do. I was studying for a certified master chef's exam, and these chefs that were practicing for were very brutal, and I couldn't take it. I would take it personally. So that would trigger me, and then I couldn't perform. I had done it 1,000 times, but I just kind of fell apart as I'm going through, because it's like the next step, and then that would start to falter, and then the next, and then it's just a chain reaction to where you get to that final part and they're like, he doesn't know how to play. I mean, he doesn't know how to cook. Well, it's not that you don't know how to cook. It's that the decision making under pressure is being driven by an unconscious reaction that we can't control. And that leads to the degradation of the performance. It doesn't matter what it is.
Interesting. I think it's so important, because coming back to the world of college athletics, so many young kids now between NIL for the name, image, and likeness for high school and for collegiate sports, they're under so much pressure to perform both academically and on the field, because, you know, their scholarship depends on their academic performance and their performance on the field. And then they have the sponsors and responsibilities and the draft and everything on top of that. And then besides being good at your sport to maintain eligibility, and also having a good academic standard, later once they graduate, there is no guarantee that they're not gonna just have to quit the sport, right, and go into the workplace. So finding that internal strength and confidence early on, you know, before you're faced with that decision, like, I didn't get drafted, I have to go start a coordinator level role and some company and just start working from the ground up. And I think it's so tough, because when you live your life with a certain goal and put all of your time into that, then having to start again from the ground up somewhere else, it's so tough. And I think it's so important to teach kids, you know, earlier about that and the struggles of that, because not many top 2-3% only make it to the top leagues.
Yeah. No, I mean, the part when they get to that is we're not judged on everything we've done, the 98% that we've done great. Because like you said, you wouldn't be in that interview, you wouldn't be on that field if you didn't have the physical talents to do it. You already have the physical talents. That's not a question, because you're there. You're already in the top 1%. Or 0.00% to be in that level.
Yeah.
But you get judged on the moments where you weren't, where you missed that, or you said the wrong thing, or you acted the wrong way. And somebody caught that. That's important. Now you're going to be judged on those moments, not the 98% that you did well. You're going to be judged on those moments you didn't, because that's those clutch moments, that's where it matters. That's the difference between zeros in your paycheck.
That's super interesting. I never actually thought about it from that perspective. You know, I think we're taught that your value is based in your performance, whether or not you're an athlete, right? I feel like a lot of people just like, you have to have a good job, and then you have to have like a family and X, Y, and Z, and whatever else the world tells you to do. And inevitably we all fall into the trap of, hey, like if I do this, then that's my value. If I don't do this, then my value is lower. Yeah, super fascinating. And for how does your sort of training session look like? So for example, like if I were to come in and I said, hey, Dan, I'm an athlete and I do super well in trainings, but I really struggle to perform when, I don't know, when my parents are there watching me or my friends are watching me and I don't know what to do. So what would your recommendations be?
Right. Well, I've designed, so all this, I did actually publish papers on the one of the scientific networks, 4 papers on the identity whole aspect of it and the architecture underneath it. So I actually designed it takes like 10 minutes to take, and it's a cognitive bandwidth mapping, so that you can take this and I can actually do that into a pie chart, and you can see where the problems are. because they're very finite. They're not like, and there's not a lot of people say, well, I can't locate it. Well, but in bandwidth, with the eight structures that I figured out or discovered, is there's a pattern to them. And then once you get to that pattern, there's another part where we actually look at the patterns. We determine which patterns are running the program. And then we learn how to control the bandwidth, because like I said, the patterns are there. And the reason they're used and they're so quick, they happen in a microsecond, is because they've been successful up to that point. Because if I was rejected as a kid, I'm going to prove people. So I'm going to practice harder. I'm going to, or do this. And I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen. You know, I wasn't picked, so I'm going to do the best I can to be picked. But that same thing is a double-edged sword. That's going to keep you from being in the elite part of it, or in the C-suite of a company, or in the finals or the championship. A perfect example that I use a lot is the British rowing team in 1998 with Ben Hunt Davis. He was the captain. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they stopped worrying it, and they made one question that's going to determine how they're going to run it. Their training and everything. It's, will it make the boat go faster? They stopped worrying about everybody else. Because once they did that, they dropped the ambiguity. They dropped all of the decision, because they actually made a decision tree, which was so simple. There's two decisions. So now you've collapsed everything down and making decisions into two things. Is it going to make the boat go faster? Yes or no? That's it. And when they did that, their bandwidth drops. So now they can focus on their training. And, you know, in martial arts in Japan, the samurai was Bushido. They had a thing called Mushin, which is basically no mind. You don't mind, no mind the people, no mind the parents in the stand, no mind the person standing there staring at you, the opponent or anything, or the sword. It's no mind. You do what you're naturally gifted to do. And those are the people who excel. Those are the ones when it's that last moment, they're in that interview, that final, and they have the confidence to where people can feel confidence. They're going to hire a confident leader. And when they can project it, not make it up, not manufacture it, not train for it, but embody it, then they're going to be successful no matter what the pressure is. And that's what everybody's looking. That's the people they want in the C-suite. That's the vice president. That's the CEO. That's the person on a championship team, or those people. When the pressure rises, they're like, how do they do it? There's so much pressure. It's like, but they don't have the pressure, because they already know their decisions. They've already narrowed them down. So that's the decision-making under process. That's leadership confidential in one sentence.
That's fascinating. That's so interesting. So would you say that, so essentially what you're saying is people in that, you know, the C-suite level, the CEOs, et cetera, they already have it all figured out. And so they sort of have the answer to the problem before the problem is even presented to them. So they strategize and think to the extent that, you know, they sort of have those answers. That's why they have the confidence.
Well, the thing is we all have the answer. We're all, like you said, we all got into that interview. We all got into that playoff. We all got, we're already there because we already have all the answers. The problem is when these patterns fire, your confidence drops and you can't make a decision properly because you already know the answer to the test.
Yeah.
But you can't do it. You can't do it, or you hesitate, because if you hesitate, that's it. They're going to feel that in that conversation you're having with that interview. They're going to feel that hesitation. That's a lack of confidence.
Yeah.
They're going to see that when you miss that ball, or you whatever. When you miss something in that moment, because you only have a microsecond to make a decision. Yeah. If you've already determined what the decisions, is before, it's not that you know the answer, it's that I'm going to make this decision because I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about the people in the stands or the people, the interviewer across from me. I'm not worried about them. I have no fear of them. So I'm just going to respond my natural way. And if your natural talent is cooking, if your natural talent is running a manufacturer business, that's going to show, because they're going to say, what about this? In this scenario, what are you going to do? Because they're hiring their CEO to make $1 billion question answer, probably. It's like, how are they going to respond? Are they going to respond with confidence? Are they going to say, you know, that's a great question, I don't know the answer? Or are they going to try to fumble through it? That decision, it's not about making the decision. It's having the decision tree narrowed down enough to where you can actually function like you've trained.
I think there is a big difference between acting confident and being confident. So I feel like a lot of people put on a mask and they pretend like, you know, they have it all figured out and I'm good. But that does not have the same impact on your internal state as, you know, being confident is. So what would be, if you have any advice for people, how to be confident and not just act confident?
Well, that's so interesting that you mentioned that confidence thing, is because trying to portray yourself as confident consumes bandwidth.
Interesting.
Trying to act like you can do something, because now you're like, you're being an imposter. And that takes up a lot of bandwidth. I mean, you still may be able to do it, but you're trying to fake your way through it, or you're trying to do something. It's the everything fall. What I found is everything falls back to your cognitive bandwidth. If you can protect that and learn how to govern it, then when you have these spikes, because we're all going to have these spikes, these moments of stress. But if your bandwidth is already controlled, when you have the spike, it's not gonna set anything off because it's low. You have the room, you know, the RPMs are still there. You're not already running at 5,000 and a red line at 6. You're running like 2,000 RPM. So when you get those moments, you're still you're not even in the yellow yet, because they're gonna come and they're gonna go. That's the thing about people, they don't realize that moment they had was a moment that was a spike in your bandwidth. And then you reacted or did not react properly, and it goes away. And that's why people never see it. You can't see the unconscious. But if you do a premeditated control of it, when those events happen, which I can't control, and I can't help you with the patterns that you already have, but we can create new patterns by controlling the bandwidth. That's the fascinating part. Because fear and ambiguity are the two biggest consumers, decisions. Unmade. How many times have you just woken up, or you couldn't sleep, or you did something and then you thought about it for days?
Yeah, a few times, sure.
Yeah, well, that controls your bandwidth. Now you're consuming your bandwidth. And if you have a moment after that, guess what's going to happen? It's going to max out. A pattern's going to come out, and then you're going to hesitate, or you're going to say the wrong thing. You're going to lash out. Mine was anger issues. That's why it was so fascinating for me to learn. It's like, when I get stressed, why am I a butthead? Well, it's not that I'm that person. It's that was a pattern that's firing because my bandwidth would collapse. That's the fact. It just fascinates me.
Interesting. I can truly relate, because I grew up in a boarding school. So from the age of 10 to 18, I didn't grow up with my parents, essentially. And when I first moved to the United States, I found a lot of those childhood patterns just come to life so quickly, because, you know, I had house parents and I had a very different upbringing from the majority of people that I'm friends with today. And those patterns that I developed as a kid while being in boarding school, of like, I had to get good grades because because I thought that if I could get good grades, my parents are going to pick me up for the weekend, right? And I was hoping like, oh, or vice versa. I was like, well, maybe I should get six and my parents pick me up. So I was trying to get as creative as possible, both the good and the bad, so I could have my parents come and visit me. And I think it was so interesting to then become an adult and realize how I still try to do my best in a lot of different areas within in sports or outside of sports, to then be feel like I that's the only way I can be recognized. And I feel like my confidence dropped a lot, like if I came in my in second place, or if I, you know, wasn't the top of my class, my parents and my family were still proud of me, but in my head it's like that's not enough. Like if I get a B plus for a class, for me that's like that's the end of the world, because for me it's either you're first or you're last. And it's so interesting because my confidence drops significantly if I'm not the top of the top. And it's so interesting that you know we talk about this, because the bandwidth, my bandwidth is probably very, very small, because for me it's either this or nothing else.
Right. I don't know if you ever seen, like, when you had a problem with your computer and you had to go to the task manager to like fix it because you had a program that was frozen. But when you look at it, you've got all these things going up and down, right? Yeah. The percentages, they're like this one, you see them and it's going up and down as the programs are being used. Well, imagine that being eight different programs within your bandwidth, and those numbers are constantly fluctuating.
Yeah.
And then you see the one that's at 80% using up that bandwidth, and you have to shut it down so that your computer will actually work again. You still have a little bit of room, but the computer won't work properly. It's slow to react, slow to respond. And then that's, now you can see that, because that's the perfect example of a person. When that one of those things is maxing out, and they don't have the room, you know, it's like you have to go and you have to delete all this information, or you have to restructure the computer. It's that same thing with us. All that RAM is taken.
Yeah.
And that's us on in an interview. That's us on the line cooking in the middle of a hot service. That's the person on the field at the last minute making that last second whatever, kick, throw, hit, whatever, that all that pressure, that's that computer is, you know, that's that computer. And you see him and you're like, how did they miss that?
Yeah.
Or how did he not respond properly? He's done this for 30 years, or he's done this for, you know, 10 seasons. How can he? Well, go back to the CPU on the computer. That's your brain. It's a physical structure. That's the cool, that's what fascinates me. And that's what I did the research papers on.
That's fascinating. I would love to do that test, because I think would love to see what my cognitive bandwidth is like, because I certainly do have patterns. And I was also someone, you know, that made it all the way to the end of the interviews and didn't get the job multiple times. But once again, like I'm the type of person that would push until the end to get it. Mm-hmm. But then that short-term satisfaction, like I got it, great. But then I'm on to the next thing and like growing and developing. And I feel like that chase and tying your confidence to an event rather than to like the internal state is something that a lot of people struggle with nowadays, because everything is, especially in the world of social media, and then tying it back to college athletics, you know, you have to be the best to make the most money and to have the best visibility. And there are like hundreds and hundreds of people for every spot on the roster. So it's very tough for people. But Dan, thank you so much. This was such an enlightening conversation. What a great way to start our Wednesday. Thank you so much. Genuinely, I learned a lot, and I think our listeners and readers would absolutely love, you know, hearing your perspective on confidence and decision making and the architecture behind our identities. And we'd love to stay in touch and support your work. And thank you so much for giving us those 30 minutes today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk soon, Dan. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Bye-bye.